الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. We talked about the importance of azan and mourning for Abu Abdullah and Hussein, and what effect this azan has and everything related to Abu Abdullah has. Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Burujardi, he was afflicted with an eye ache for which he found no cure. All the best physicians in Tehran and Qom, they used to come and treat, but no cure was sought. It was the 9th of Muharram, and in those days the processions, they used to come out from the Haram of Hazrat Ma'asuma alayhi salam, and in those processions it was the habit or the adat of the Iranians, and the same in Iraq. That is, they come out with clay wiped onto their foreheads or with dust onto their heads, as if that is the scene of Karbala, and they have all that dust and clay on their heads. He says that I was standing in one of these lanes and this procession was passing by me, and I saw one of the kids, about 12, 13 years of age. He also was in that procession and he was crying for Abu Abdullah really bad, shedding tears for Abu Abdullah in an amazing way. And he said that riwayat, they say the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah has that miraculous effect that it grants cure. He says no doubt. And then he says that this dust, this clay that has been wiped onto the forehead of this kid who is crying for Abu Abdullah, this shouldn't be less than that too. Takes a bit of it, wipes it onto his eyes that were hurting, he says he got shifa, cure. So anything... anything connected, related to Abu Abdullah with sincerity, with khulus, has that effect. You must have heard in Urdu, but for the kids in English. Futrus, one of the angels of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala, who is the servants in the throne of Allah, he was punished, his wings were damaged, burnt, and he was in one of the islands in this earth repenting and asking Allah to forgive. It so happens that Abu Abdullah and Hussein is born. Jibreel with a swarm of other angels, they come to extend their felicitations to the Prophet. And then when Futrus finds that they are going towards Abu Abdullah, he says, let me also join them. He joins them, comes there, and then touches his wings, which were damaged, to the cradle of Abu Abdullah, repents, and he also is cured, and his repentance also accepted by Allah, again by the mediation of Abu Abdullah. And again, he finds the same position which he was working in over there, in the throne of Allah. Abu Abdullah plays an important part. Repentance, tawbah, through Abu Abdullah. Crying, shedding tears for Abu Abdullah. It has a miraculous effect. No matter which door you knock, you find that Abu Abdullah has a special grace, special favors. So a majlis like this, and that has been held to mourn for Abu Abdullah, it has that miraculous effect. The whole tragedy of Karbala was based on values. Values. When we say values, it could be anything. It doesn't mean only salat and zakat and fasting and all that. Values, goodness, bounties. He wanted to put goodness in place, take away bad. If you look into the shahadat of Hazrat Zahra alayha salam, or the tragedy, or the tragedy of Karbala, both are the same, similar, very similar. After all, that's the mother, that's the son. Now we know, and it's our aqeedah, that the ilm that is given to ma'asumeen, it is from Allah. It is not a knowledge which ma'asum acquires, it's given to him. That is given to him. He doesn't need to go to colleges, schools and universities to get that knowledge. It is given to him, bestowed to him by Allah. A God-given, divine bestowal to them. Imam possesses that knowledge. In Medina, after Rasulullah, and when those Mala'een, La'natullah alayh, their intentions were to bring Amir al-Mu'mineen into the street so that they defame him or that they fight him. And they said that in both cases, whether we defame him in the community or we fight him, we will win, he will lose. That were the tactics. They come to the house of Wahy, the house of Hazrat Zahra. And there, normally when someone knocks at the door and if the man is at home, he opens the door. And if Amir al-Mu'mineen had opened the door, the defamation was there. And then they would have been successful up to a certain extent. What happens over here, everything twists around. Here Amir al-Mu'mineen, he knew what's going to unfold. He says to Zahra, go and open the door. Did he not know that if she opens the door, she's going to be crushed between the door and the wall? He knew that. But before she goes there, it is as if Imam, he's signing the certificate of Shahadat of Hazrat Zahra for her to go and open the door. Now when that door is opened, the door is crushed down, she is burnt down, here the evil picture of the enemies is portrayed. They wanted to do something else, but now people know that they are evil, they are bad. No matter how much media does, but still that evil, negative picture of those zalimeen was known to everyone. But for that, a sacrifice was given. That Imam, he had to sign that certificate of Shahadat of Hazrat Zahra for her to go and open the door, get killed, but the picture of those zalimeen be shown to them. The same thing is with Karbala. Karbala, it wasn't a right match. 30,000 on one side, 78 or 72 on the other. And again, if someone is going to fight a battle, a war, no one takes wife and children. No one takes kids to the war. So over here again, when he brings his household to Karbala, and they show their evil picture by looting, by plundering, by burning down, by all those afflictions to kids and women and children, their evil picture was known to everyone. So that too, it's something similar to what happens in Medina. So Imam over there and Hazrat Zahra over there, the two, the concept was that the values be promoted, the evil of the enemy be understood. It was said that due to Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, whatsoever a person wants, he gets. Yesterday we recited those lan a few times. If you look into Ziyarat Ashura, it has been, so much of emphasis has been given to that, that you say that 100 times. Why is it? When Prophet Adam, he loses Hawa, he passes by a place, land of Karbala, and he feels so much disturbed. He says to Allah, God, have I committed another sin that I am having that sensation and feeling so much disturbed? Wahy is revealed. God says, no Adam, you haven't done anything wrong. The place where you are passing by is Karbala. And there, Hussein, he will be killed. And he says, Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet of the end of time, he will be killed in Karbala. And he says, Yazid is the killer. And then Allah says, what do I do? He says, curse him. Curse the killer of Yazid. He cursed the killer, who is Yazid, who is the cursed, the mal'oon in the skies and the earth. Again the same thing, Prophet Nuh, when he was informed that that azab, the chastisement, is going to downpour, and water is going to pour from the skies and from every rain and from the floods, they embark on that ship, and when the ship is in motion, it stops at a point. Prophet Noah is upset, says that why did it stop? Says that the place where this ship has stopped, it's Karbala. He inquires what Karbala is. He is informed about Karbala. He is informed about Yazid. And the teaching again to him is that curse, the killer of Imam Hussein, that is Yazid. Prophet Ibrahim was riding his horse, and he passes by Karbala and falls into a pit. Now it was mentioned in these lectures in the past few days that many a times we find that afflictions hit us. We shouldn't just pass by it saying that it was just by chance. We have to analyze. For example, the stories that were mentioned from Marhum Khayyat, when the camel kicked him, he goes, sits in the mosque, repents and asks Allah to tell him what was the reason for that. Those who are smart, they are after reasons. Nothing in this universe happens just by fluke. Everything, there is a cause and effect, and everything happens with the chain of cause and effect. So Prophet Ibrahim, he falls in that pit. He says, God, have I done something wrong that I've been punished, that I fell, I was afflicted with this? He says, no. The pit you fell is the place wherein the grandson of the Prophet of the End of Time will be beheaded by Shimr. And there again, he was recited the majlis, and he was informed of what would unfold. And there again, that same cursing, the enemy of Aba Abdullah, was taught by Allah. The same thing is with Prophet Ibrahim. The same thing is with Prophet Musa. Prophet Musa was passing by, and there his footwear, it breaks. He pricks his feet, it starts bleeding. Says to God, what was this? Again, the same thing unfolds, and he is informed, and he also curses the killer of Aba Abdullah and Hussein. And the same thing with Prophet Sulaiman, because Prophet Sulaiman is among those great prophets of Allah who was given the might and the rule over the land, and also jinn, the birds, the animals, everything he ruled on, the winds as well. Once these winds, they get furious, he say, and beyond his control, says, why is that? My throne is traveling and this wind is furious, it's in rage. Says it's passing from the land of Karbala. And the land of Karbala is that place wherein this tragedy is going to unfold, and for that reason, and then when he is informed, again the teaching to him was that curse the killer of Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. And in some of these riwayats says that curse him four times. This is one. The other thing is that yesterday there was a question from a sister that she heard something from the YouTube about Islam, and she had so many questions of what has happened about Islam. Now she has questions about the basis, the fundamentals. First of all, you don't get Islam from YouTube. You don't get... Islam from YouTube means very soon the person who has taken Islam has to take a U-turn from Islam. So it doesn't last long. YouTube is not the place to get Islam. Internet is not the place to get Islam. Islam from a mosque, from a member, from a person who is learned, who is qualified, who will teach you, who will save you, who can. Yesterday we recited a hadith in the Jummah khutbah. There, you have to go to the right source to get Islam, not from everywhere. One of the attitudes and qualities one should possess, it's to observe the rights, huquq. And there is a treatise of rights from our fourth Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. And it's available online, it is in English. And it is reported from our fourth Imam, and there he mentions 180 rights. That every individual, now we have to study these, all this is a lesson to me first. What are these rights? Rights of a father to the son to the father, husband to wife, brothers, sisters, in the community, alim, ma'amum, imam, center, trees, plants, fish, animals, everything, neighbors, and all these things that can be listed, everything has a right. And if these rights are not given to them, we have usurped the rights of that. We become a ghasib. And in Nahj al-Balagha, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says that إِنَّكُمْ مَسْئُولُونَ حَتَّى عَنِ الْبِغَاءِ وَالْبَهَائِمِ, that you will be inquired even about the land and the animals. You will have to answer. You'll be questioned for that. Why land? If an opportunity was given to you to establish that place, for example, establish a mosque, establish a place of worship, if you were given an opportunity and you did not do it, you will be questioned. If an animal, you were tough on that animal, again, you will be questioned. We have animal rights in Islam, they are amazing. And again, the simplest of that, it's one of these rights that we have, that when a person is slaughtering an animal, one of the basic ones is that you give water to that. That is among the rights that has to be observed. So plants have rights, animals have rights, stones have rights. And if a person cuts down a tree for no reason, he will be questioned that why did he cut down that tree. Again, if you remember, an example was mentioned regarding Marhum Ja'far Agha-i Mujtahidi. He travels all that distance, 10 kilometers, to put that ant back in that place. So great people, they do tasks that are amazing. He says, I have to do that so that I punish myself, that I am not careless in future. So an ant being shifted from one place to the other, we don't even care. But for them, people of that great caliber, for them, these rites, they observe them in a very dignified and a wonderful way. So eyes, ears, all of them, they have a right. Brothers have right, sisters have right, mothers, parents. Now again, to me first. In an office, a secretary, he loses a file. His boss says that, I want that file. He searches, and he was a good person. Now when you find these tests and trials in our life, it is not as such that God is being unkind to us. God is being kind to us that these trials and tests come along in our life. There is a hadith in Hadith al-Qudsi, and you must have noted, benefited from this. Once in a while, when we try to say our prayers on time, sometimes it so happens that the prayer, it gets qaza. For example, the morning prayers. Or if you were used to your nocturnal prayers, that time is taken away from you and you couldn't offer that nocturnal prayer. Why does it happen? Here Allah says that due to the love I have to my servant, I make him sleep. He doesn't wake up for his prayers in the morning and he misses his prayers. Says, why do I do that? Says that because of that love I have to him. If I had woken him up for his prayers, he would have got proud and that pride would have ruined him. For him not to be afflicted with pride, with ghurur, with takabbur, I make him sleep so that he misses his prayers, he gets up and then he starts all over again with repentance that God forgive me, God forgive me for this crime which I have done, with this sin which I have done. And that is, I have lost my prayer. This doesn't mean that we just sleep over and then don't wake up for namaz. No, that is not being meant. And then we say that God is being too kind to us and we can sleep, sleep, sleep. No, that is not being meant. This is in regular, normal circumstances when we do our prayers regularly and all of a sudden this happens, this hiccup comes across in one's life. Not in extraordinary circumstances when we sleep all the time. He loses his file and he searches in the office, couldn't find. His boss calls him and says that I want the file by the end of today or else you'll be sacked. Now again, where he was working, maybe one of these secret services where the files are so important. He couldn't find it. Again, he's just shaken that, God, what shall I do? I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't misplaced it. I haven't given to anyone. It is my room, my place, and no one comes in there. except me, myself. And where has it gone? He says again, the boss says, this weekend I'll give you, Monday I want it. Now, when he was coming back on Thursday from his work in Tehran, he goes to a mosque. Now, good people, when they get afflicted, first assistance from Allah. Comes to the mosque and asks, God, help me. I haven't done anything wrong, you know that. What has happened, I don't know. And this severe test from me, what my boss is going to say, I don't know. He was coming out of the mosque, and an unknown person meets him, says that, go and meet Sheikh Rajab Ali Khayyat. He said, I didn't know that person, and also I did not know who this Rajab Ali Khayyat is. Well, in any case, I got a message from him. I said, I'll find the address, go and meet him. He travels all the way, comes to Sheikh Rajab Ali Khayyat, and was waiting for him to come to see him. Before he could say anything to him, he said, now, this person who has lost the file is in bad terms with his sister. His brother-in-law, sister's husband, has died 3 years. She has 3 kids, and he has severe ties, has no relation with her. Comes to meet Sheikh for the first time. He has never met him before. He hasn't posed the question before him. He says, Fulani, for example, his name, if it was Sayyid Hussein, says, go and fix your relationship with your sister. And what you've lost, you'll find it. He says, he was amazed that how come, without me telling anything to him, he told me that how did he know that I am in bad terms with my sister? Gets up, straight to the sister's house. There's a weeping, crying, because they've met them after 3 years. Are you a brother? Can you be named and tagged as a brother? My husband died, you never came to see. You were bad with me, but what about these 3 orphans? You never came and asked how I lived, how I survived for these 3 years. After all that crying and pleading, they say sorry to each other. And then he says, from now on, I will come and see you regularly. Go and buy some grocery for her. Leave some money for her. Comes and it's Monday morning. Over there, it's Saturday morning, the weekday. When he comes to his room, opens the drawer, the file is on top, the first file. Now, how come it happened? Did anyone take? No one takes. Now, we must have experienced this in our life, that things go missing. No one has stolen, no one has come. But God makes us blinded for some time. Many things we can't hear, many things we can't see. What is the reason for that? What is the reason for this mess that comes across, or these afflictions which happen in our life? You have these doormats in your homes. Sometimes you clean them with a vacuum, it doesn't clean. You hold that doormat, you bang it on the wall. Or sometimes you take a stick or beat it with a stick so that all that dust comes out of it. God, now over here we don't want to hurt that doormat. We want to clean it. God also does these tricks with us. He hits us a little bit at some time so that we are purified. All that trash in us comes out so that we get back to the square one and we are purified. So many of these afflictions, seizing away of wealth, losing of something, or dying of someone, or we falling ill, all these afflictions, they are for us, for our own benefit. It shouldn't be as such that we should say that, oh, no afflictions mean God loves us more. That is not the case. During the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, there was a Jew who lived in Medina. He has some chickens in his house, and again, one of the birds which he has, a pigeon, lays an egg on the wall. And it so happens that an egg falls off the nest. It rolls over from the wall. And again, you've seen these in cartoons over here. It rolls all over the wall and then comes down and falls onto the ground and doesn't crack. The egg is as it was. He comes and says to the Prophet that God has special grace on me. That egg which should have cracked immediately when it fell off the nest, it didn't. It rolled all over the wall, came down the wall and onto the ground, still it did not crack. In reply, he says, no, that's not the case. Allah's wrath is on you. That's the reason for that. If you were to be afflicted, it means that He has grace on you. Now these afflictions which we have in our life, these balas that come across, riwayat, they say that when you get sick, you fell sick, it is either for the removal of the sins that we have committed, or it is for the ascension of a spiritual elevation of an individual. It's either for that maghfirat or for the elevation. It's either for the two. And again, we have riwayat that Allah, when He has that great grace for an individual, He makes him sick, or sometimes people, they fell ill, and then, now I don't want to say this as a hard and fast rule, but what we have in riwayat, that sometimes people, they fell ill and then they die, that Allah, He wants to purify them by seeing the pain in this dunya and elevate their ranks. And again, we find, they say that in barzakh, in the grave, this fishar al-qabr, or the pressure in the grave which a person sees, again, that is for the uluv darajat, for the elevation of the ranks of an individual to get a better position in the hereafter. So we were talking about rights, treaties of rights by our fourth Imam, 180 rights, he says. There is a hadith, again, says that with regards to Mirsad, Marhum Imam Khomeini to his son Sayyid Ahmad in his wasiyah says that if the files of our files, the performance reports, were to be dealt by God, everything is going to be easy, swift, because He is all merciful, Arhamur Rahimin, Ra'uf, Rahim, so on and so forth. But if these files were to be given in the hands of people, that is, if there were rights that were not observed, and they stopped us on the day of judgment. Now on the day of judgment, there are different stages, different paths, or different checkpoints. One of these checkpoints is known as Mirsad. Quran talks about it, إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْسَاد, that Mirsad is a checkpoint where people will be stopped for the rights which they did not observe in the community. Now when they stop, it is not as such that they will let you go because you were a friend or a relative. They won't let anyone go because everyone over there is in need. And that need will be compensated, will be fulfilled by taking away the good deeds that we have done. Okay, the good deeds, if they were enough, they will take away. But again, if they are not happy and not pleased, and that rida of their satisfaction of theirs is not sought, they would say, we will be satisfied on a condition that take these evils, these sins that we did in our lifetime, take them and then we will be satisfied, we will forgive you. So we've lost all the good we've done, we've gained all the evil of others which we did not do, and as a result of that, that person is satisfied. What is the reason that when it comes to prayers, the mood is not good? When it comes to du'as, not bothered. When it comes to a mosque, it's boring. When it comes to all these things, we have an excuse. Why is that? Why do we do that? When you want to get a license, for example, for flying a twin-seater plane or a four-seater plane, they say that you just have a flying time for 40 hours and then you'll get the license to fly. Or if it's a commercial plane, fly for 1,000 hours and then you'll get your license. In the spiritual elevation, it's the same. Spiritual uplift, it's the same. You work for a certain amount of time. For example, the example that was given from Marhum Khayyat, that he, when he was saying his prayers and he comes to Assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabi, he sees the Prophet and the Prophet says, you are late, when he was just 25. Means that a person can elevate much quicker to higher spiritual destinations in a lesser time. Now how come we, after this so many decades of worship, services, majalis, du'as, Quran, none of these stages have been passed? None of them. Why is it? The reason for that, Mullah Ahmad Naraqi, he narrates a story, says that it's like this sack in which you are collecting grains, for example, wheat. You've been collecting grains all your life, but you are not aware that there's a mouse who has eaten and has made a hole in that sack, and whatever is being poured in is being drained out. So because everything is being drained out, we don't feel, we don't elevate, we don't come up. Or for example, in that khutbah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says that in the month of Ramadan, you don't do anything. Don't recite Quran. Don't pray. Just enter the month of Ramadan. Every breath you breathe in, every inhalation of yours, says it's tasbih. Don't do anything, just sleep for the whole month. He says that sleeping of yours is ibadah. That is the benefit a person gets from that 1 month. So, all those rewards that we get in that 1 month and which is put in that sack, that should be sufficient enough for us to elevate, but we don't. Why? The reason is that that sack which is collecting all this stuff, it has got a hole in it and everything is just draining out. Sometimes it's not draining out, but the fuel that we are pouring in, it's bad. For an unleaded car, we are putting in diesel, for example. So that too is bad. The Prophet, he says that haram, it's that fuel which will never make anyone elevate. So again, we talked about imposing penalties. And that is, if a person imposes something or correct. Now, we have so many faults, many, many faults. Prayers would be faulty, fasts would be faulty, and all these alms, charity would be faulty, recitation would be faulty, du'as would be faulty, jealousy, pride, backbiting, gossip. Now, all these are defects which a person can have in an individual. To put all of them aside in one go, it's impossible. Now, you know what Pir and Murid means, Imam Zadeh means, these shrines that we have. A person, he loses his donkey and comes to one of these Imam Zadehs, or you can call it a Pir or Murid, for example, if it's in Pakistan, Imam Zadeh. Comes to the shrine of the Imam Zadeh and starts crying that I've lost my donkey, help me find it. Upon his pleading, the caretaker of that shrine, he comes out, he says, what's the problem? He says, I've lost my donkey and I want it. And that's the only means of my sustenance. He says, go to that Imam Zadeh in front. He says, why? He says, do you see the dome of that one? It's larger and bigger than this one. He says, what difference does it make? If the two are Imam Zadehs, this also should be the same, that also should be the same. He says, no, no. This one, if you've lost a wallet, a key, a keychain, a knife, a pen, you come here. For larger items, you go there. And then, now we are like that small dome. We can't correct all of these problems that we have in us in one go. It's impossible. So what we do is, one by one, bit by bit. If it's lying, correct that. If it's backbiting, correct that. Again, jealousy, correct bit by bit, gradually, slowly. And then a point would come that we have corrected and secured all of these problems that we have. So all in one go, it's impossible for us. Just have that example of that small dome and the big dome in mind, and that will. One of the things which, there's a book called Nishani has been Nishanha. It's in two volumes. It's the biography of Marhum Sheikh Hasan Ali Isfahani, known as Nokhodaki. He says that if a person wants spiritual elevation, wants to ascend, just three things, what he did. When he was asked that, what did you do? Did you do anything miraculous, any zikr, any recital? He says, three things I did. First of all, rizq was halal. Second, prayers were on time. And third, I respected Sadat a lot. May that be a young, may that be old. All that respect I had to Sadat and rizq halal. And in addition to that, namaz, salat, prayers, performed and done on time. Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Mar'ashi Najafi, again among the Maraji'i Taqleed who passes away in the mid-90s, he says that there was a businessman, a wealthy person in Qum. He invited me every now and then. That he insisted a lot that I come to his house. Well, after all that emphasis, once I went to his house, and after having the dinner or lunch over there, he says that night I saw Imam Al-Asr ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. In my dreams. And then he says that don't eat on every table. Imam says, don't extend your hands to every table. Don't eat from every table. Now he says that he was a good person. Halal, haram were being observed by him. He says he researched what was the reason why Imam gave me that message that don't eat on every table. Then he found out the wealth which this person has, he has the possession, the wealth of a Saghir. Saghir is someone who is an orphan whose father has passed away and he hasn't reached 15 years of age. He isn't mature now. The wealth which he has inherited, it's known as the possession, the milk, the maal of a Saghir, and that has to be retained or has to be invested in a way so that he benefits from it. Or if not retained, and when he is mature, that should be given to him. And when he researches, he finds that in his wealth, there is a maal, a wealth of a Saghir, which is mixed in it, a contaminated wealth he has. So it's tough, very tough. Many a times, we find that we are lazy in our prayers, we don't feel. Initially, it's this laziness which comes across. The moment we get lazy, we have to fix ourselves. That why were we lazy? Not that we were tired today, too much of work today. No, that's not the reason. Lazy in worship, it's much more severe. It's signs of danger that we have to look into it. What is the reason for that laziness? It's not as simple as just getting tired, because we can work even more, yet we can open up a space for prayers and offer the prayers without being lazy. So that laziness, it's a first stage, initial stage, and the final stage is that heart getting hard-heartened. That is a marad, a disease, which Quran says that khatam Allahu ala qulubihim. That Allah then seals that heart, because that heart is darkened. It doesn't become dark all of a sudden. It starts from that spot. Again, look into Ashura. Imam on the day of Ashura, when he speaks to these people, that is the army of Yazid, he delivers the sermons. They, when they listen to the sermons of Imam, they start clapping, they start whistling. And Imam says that, you know what is the reason for that? You not listening to what I say? You reason for clapping and whistling? It's that haram that has filled your bellies. Salaam. A person, he comes to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, says that, what do I do, Ya Rasulullah, so that I enjoy prayer, so that I enjoy du'as. So again, enjoying a prayer, enjoying a du'a, enjoying a recitation, attending a majlis, all that, it is a joy which needs special grace. And in reply, he says that atib kasbak tustajabu da'watak, that this income of yours, make it pure, make it clean. If the income is clean, if it's pure, you yourself will become mustajabu da'wa. Mustajabu da'wa means whatsoever you ask Allah, He will give you. Your prayers will be granted. And then says that فَإِنَّ الرَّجُلْ يَرْفَعْ إِلَيَّ فِيهِ حَرَامًا فَمَا تَسْتَجَابُ دَعْوَتُهُ أَرْبَعِينَ يَوْمًا. That someone who has raised his hands towards me and I find haram in his existence, I won't accept his prayers for 40 days. Now again, a question you may be having, and that is, what about working in entities like grocery stores over here, Albertson for example, Walmart for example? Can we work over there? What about the income that we get from there? Is that lawful? Is that permitted? Or is that haram? When it comes to work, it doesn't only mean that sometimes there is this misunderstanding and they say that we'll work in those stores, but we will tell them that we won't be working in the liquor section or the freezer section, because those are the two places where you've got the haram. Okay, that could be sorted out. But what about the income we get? The income that we get from those entities, that income, it's mixed with haram. We can't take that. Means that we can't work there. So a person who works in these places, the income from that, it's the income which is not permissible. So again, just bear this in mind, that working in such entities, it's not permitted. So a person comes to the Prophet and says that, what do I do? He says that, correct your income. One of the other things, now the question was about Dajjal, that what is Dajjal? Now Dajjal, it's a whole big system. Allah says that you have to break your heart, you have to cry. A tear should shed down from your eyes so that you perform a better service, a better dua, a better recitation. What does Dajjal say? Says that you have to be jolly, you have to be happy, you have to be in a good mood, you have to have fun in life. So fun in life means it contradicts with that tear, it contradicts with that dua, it contradicts with crying. Look into the duas that we have from Ma'asumeen, I believe it's Dua Makarim al-Akhlaq. There our fourth Imam, he says that, Allahumma a'inni ala al-buka'i ala nafsi. That God help me cry over myself. That is, crying over ourselves, it is good. It elevates ourselves. And it contradicts with that conspiracies of Dajjal, who says that be jolly. A person, he met me in LA once. He said, Maulana, why do you emphasize so much on crying? We have to be jolly, we have to be happy, because this crying brings about stress, depression. What do you say? I said, sit and cry for 1 hour. He says, it contradicts my faith. I said, whatever. So that is, again, the tactics of Dajjal. He says, be jolly, be happy. You don't be jolly, you don't be happy. Now, if you just turn on the televisions, all these programs the kids have, do you see anything decent in that? It's all laughing and laughing, throwing of a food fight, throwing cakes, pancakes. That is the best fun a person can have. What fun is that? So, again, income, if it's bad and in this world is bad, dua does not accept. Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Araki, again among the Maraji Taqlid, who passes away in the mid-90s, he reports this himself. Says that there was a friend of his called Sayyid Mahdi, a very good person. He says that once he woke up for Salatul Layl, for his nocturnal prayers. Now the houses in those days were as such that when you come out of your room, you have your yard and there is a pond in the middle of the yard. The toilet is also in the yard. He says that I woke up, I came out to do my wuzu for my Salatul Layl. He says that the moment I opened the door, the yard of mine, it wasn't the regular yard which was always. It was like the yards or the sahn of the shrines of Ma'asumeen, like in Karbala, like in Qom, like in Mashhad, where you've got that great big sahn and you've got rooms, hundreds of rooms all around. He says, I saw my yard, my own house, like that, a huge big sahn. And then he says, I was just amazed that am I in my own house or where am I? He comes down the stairs. And he says that when I came nearer to the pond, I hear a cry. Someone crying very painfully. He says that that cry was coming from one of the rooms in that yard of my house. He follows that cry. The nearer he gets, it's much more painful. And then the doors of that room, they are locked. He bangs at the door, says that open the door. No one would open, and there is someone crying painfully. And then he says, from the grooves of the door, I saw inside the room, and I saw someone has been buried with his neck out, buried with stacks of stones laid around him, right up to his neck. And there are two angels there, and they are performing an operation into the mouth and throat of this person. And then he says, I saw that person, it's a friend of mine, a businessman in Tehran. And I was yelling, screaming, and asking them to leave him, leave him. And they took care, no care of him. As if no notice, they never heard anything. And then he says that, when I saw this, what was happening with that person, I couldn't say my namaz-e-shab, my nocturnal prayers, and I was just shaken as to what I have seen today. Was waiting to see his ustad, marhum Mirza Jawad Aghai Tabrizi, in Qom. He says that I was just waiting for the Fajr prayers time, and as soon as it was Fajr, I ran to my ustad's house. It's early morning, everyone is asleep, and I start banging the door of his house. And now the ustad, he hasn't come out, he doesn't know who is behind the door. He says, wait, Sayyid Mahdi, they showed you something, it doesn't mean that you have to panic so much. He bangs at the door, comes, opens the door, and the student, he falls into the arms of his ustad, says, this is what I saw. He says, what you saw is the death. Your friend in Tehran, he is dying. That is the clip of how his death is taking place. The reason for that, he lives on sud, on jury, on interest. That was the painful death. And he says that after a few days, in those days there were no telephones, he gets a telegraph that on the 7th, he was invited for the 7th day of that person who has died. And he says that I saw the time and the day when he had passed was exactly the time and the date which I saw what was happening with him when he was giving away his life. Now Quran talks about these issues that someone who lives on interest and jury and sood, it is as if he is eating fire. That is eating fire. The reason for lack of elevation, spiritual uplift, lack of feeling that joy in prayers, in worship, it's that sack of ours wherein we are pouring all those bounties and goodnesses, and there's a drain in there, everything is being drained out. So what do we need to secure it? To secure it, it's these wajibat that we have to do. Just crying for Aba Abdullah, it's a top-up. It would do no that much good if the bases or the pillars, which are the wajibat, if they are lacking. Crying is good. We talked about crying. All that is very good. But if the elements which are wajibat and muharramat, if they don't exist over there, then that crying would not benefit as much as it should benefit. So, haram does not exist in our livelihood. Again, if you look into Hazrat Abdul Azim, Imam, the Imam Zadeh, who is in Ray, in the south of Tehran, he comes to the presence of the 10th Imam, Hadi alayhi salam. He himself is a great person, comes to the Imam and says that, Imam, let me tell you what my faith and belief is, see if it's okay. He comes and says that to the Imam. Imam listens to him and says, yes, your faith is that of my father, of myself and my forefathers. So asking someone to correct, it's not bad. Showing someone what your faith is, it's not bad. If we have doubts, getting those doubts relieved, it's not bad, it's good. Husnu su'al, nisful ilm. If you have a question, ask. That question of yours is half knowledge itself. So just putting down all the doubts and questions which may be having, that is dangerous. If we have a doubt, immediately, because these doubts, they come across from shaitan. Our fifth imam, he says that after your prayers, say, Astaghfirullah alladhi la ilaha illa huwa al-hayyu al-qayyum, dhul jalali wal-ikram, wa atubu ilayh. And there is a dangerous report, and we did talk about this, that someone who doesn't have that presence of mind in his prayers, does he not fear that he could be changed into a donkey? Now, one of the benefits of a jama'at prayer is that if the moods are wandering around, if the prayers are faulty, all of that is compensated as the result of a jama'at, which is a great blessing that Allah has given to us. That even, for example, if the imam, his attention was wandering around, Or if the Ma'mumin, if his attentions were wandering around, or if there were shortcomings in the prayers, because it is a congregation, it is a jama'at, and the ruling is that if one person in that congregation, his prayers are accepted, the entire congregation is accepted. If there is a gathering and there a dua is recited, and the dua of one out of those 500 people is accepted, as a result of that one ameen of that one person, du'as of the entire congregation are accepted. Bala, adab, from a nation is removed as a result of the presence of one good person in that nation. So all these things are there. There is another hadith over here. Now, Hamad bin Isa, he is one of the reporters who has reported a lot of ahadith from our sixth Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Once Imam says to Hamad bin Isa that, come on Hamad, get up, let me see how you say your prayers. He says, Imam, I've reported all of these ahadith you've said about prayers. And you want, he says, yes, get up, I want to see how you pray. It's like asking a marja'i taqleed to say your prayers. For example, Imam is there and there is a marja'i taqleed. Hamad bin Isa is of that high caliber. He says his prayers and Imam says, is that a prayer you did? Is that your prayers? You should be ashamed with all that white hair on your face and beard, and is that the prayers you say? If Imam could be that sharp and strong at him, then God knows what's going to happen of us. In another hadith, our sixth Imam, he recites that, now we talked about being lazy is dangerous. Being lazy, the next step is that the heart becomes hard-heartened, and that is a danger. Imam, he enjoys prayers. The reporter, he says that I saw him in ruku, and he says, Subhana Rabbi al-Azimi wa bihamdi, 60 times. 60 times in one ruku. So these are the prayers that were done by Ma'sumin. When someone passes away, what we do is that we put away the things that are present in the house by which the children in that house, they are reminded of the deceased soul, of the departed soul. But when you look into Medina, the house wherein Hazrat Zahra was crushed, was injured, was burnt, there, even if Amirul Mu'mineen puts away whatever he has in that house, what is he going to do with the door of that house? The door was that door wherein she was crushed. One of the ulama of Mashhad, Sayyid Hussein Ahmadi, he says that once I was in need, my house, it needed repair. And I wanted some funds for that repair. I didn't have that. Now these are good people. Whenever they need something, they go to the right door, the right house. He says that he comes to the door of Imam al-Asr. Says that, Imam, I'm in need of these funds to get my house fixed. And there is no reply. Nothing happens. He gets upset. Goes straight to Mashhad. There complains, says, Imam, I was in need. I asked your son, he never gave me. I've come here to complain. And then he says that as I was complaining, as I was hot-tempered, and I was talking to the Imam and complaining about the 12th Imam to the 8th Imam about his grandson, why he is not providing him, not helping him. He says, I saw a young man next to me, with him an old man. Now that young was the Imam himself. That old is Prophet Khizr. Now those mu'mineen who have benefited from the presence of the Imam, they say that we seen that old man with him, and wherever Imam was seen, he also has been seen. As if Hazrat Khizr is the secretary of the Imam and associates him at all times. Now that young man, he smiles at me, that is the Imam. And then he says that nothing in this world It's so simple. And then he says that our grandparents, they also lived a simple life, a simple livelihood. And all of a sudden, he raises his hand, and then Sayyid Mahdi, he says that as soon as he raised his hand, I saw the house of Amir al-Mu'mineen in Medina. In Kufa, sorry. And says that I was amazed to see, A, it's that tiny house of Amir al-Mu'mineen that was told to us, and with that, the pottery, the dishes, the plates made of clay, that little wheel, and that is, and then he comes and focuses on that door. Is that the door which crushed my mother? And when he was reminded of that door, he says that I saw this Sayyid standing by me, he starts crying. Now there are two things which move the Imam or which make him cry a lot. One of them, it's whenever the name of Hazrat Zahra is uttered, his heart breaks and his eyes, they fell tears. And the second is Aba Abdullah. Whenever he is reminded, he cries. There's a phrase in Ziyaratul Nahya which we recited yesterday. There said that لَأَنْدُبَنَّكَ سَبَاحًا وَمَسَّاءً, that I will cry on you day and night. And in one of these visions which were seen, and when Imam was asked, Imam, what do you mean by that? I cry day and night, and I shed tears, not tears, but tears of blood. What is meant by that? Imam, do you mean that this crying of yours day and night is for Aba Abdullah? He says, no. Says, is it for Ali Akbar? Says, no. For Abul Fazl? Says, no. For Asghar? Says, no. Says, who is that cry and call for? Why do you shed tears of blood day and night? He says, that's for my aunt Zainab. She is that Ummul Masaib. Now the tragedy of Aba Abdullah, it ends on the day of Ashura. But the mission of Zainab al-Kubra starts from that Ashura. She has to take care of the household. She has to take care of the Imam. She has to take care of the infants. Now it's amazing, household of Rasulullah, the five members, all the children of Hazrat Zahra, when they are born, for example, when she is born, Zainab is born, she is named through Jibreel, that is the name given to her, is the name that was given by Allah, Tabaraka wa ta'ala. Rasulullah cries upon the birth of Zainab al-Kubra. And then says that the afflictions, the balas that would fall upon her. Zainab, at a very young age, she sees the passing away of her grandfather. Not long, 70 or 95 days after passing away, another tragedy, and that is her mother. Before the mother dies, she sees for herself how this house was bashed in, how the doors, how she was crushed between the door and the wall, how the ribs were broken, how her brother Muhsin was killed, how she was burnt. Now all these are scenes which she saw at a very young age. After her mother, the wasiyah which she has, and then not long, the father dies. Again in a very brutal way, in a mosque, wounded on the head. After a few years again, she is the first one to witness her brother Hassan throwing up blood when he is poisoned. She brings that vessel to him. After that again, the downpour of masaib, downpour of balas, and that is the tragedy of Karbala. Throughout her life, she has 7 trips. Now, being the daughter of Amir al-Mu'mineen, granddaughter of Rasulullah, that is, daughter of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the daughter of the Khalifa, daughter of the Imam. Out of those 7 trips, only two trips she had, 2 journeys she had, which were in honor, with dignity. All the other trips were in a very wretched way. In those trips, when she wanted to embark, she had Akbar, she had her other brothers, to assist so that she gets on to the ride. But after this tragedy of Karbala, there is no one to assist, but she has to help everyone embark. Now, riding on a camel, it's tough. Even if it's seated and someone wants to get up on the camel, sit on the camel, it's very tough. Now, she has to help others sit on a camel with no carriage on, and then she has to get on. Now, when it's her turn, there is no one to help her to ride. The worship she has, being the daughter of Amir al-Mu'mineen, her worship is second to none. But when it comes to the day of Ashura, this Zainab, so strong with all those worships, she can't stand in worship anymore. She has to sit. When it comes to tafsir, when it comes to knowledge, the ilm she possesses, that too, our fourth imam says that you are an alima, ghayr mu'allima. An alima who hasn't been taught, you have been taught by God Himself. When it comes to the speech of Zainab, she's got that fierce speech that shook the court of Yazid and Ibn Ziyad after Ashura. The sacrifices she gave, again, second to none, no match, no parallel to that. She gives away her sons, Aun and Muhammad. And on after the day when these heads were distributed, and they find two heads as if they are lost and found property belonging to no one. A woman, she comes there and says that, who do these heads belong to? Do they not have a mother, a father, a relative? They are the heads of Aun and Muhammad, sons of Zainab. When they come to her, she has got someone else to mourn and cry for, and that's her brother, Hussein. Zainab, she is the one who takes care of the Imam, because Imam Sajjad, he is ill in Karbala. And when everything was burnt down and Imam is in the camps, in the tent, she puts herself in danger, drags and brings the Imam out, throws herself onto the Imam so that Imam is protected and she is hurt. So long as Abu Abdullah was alive, she puts herself in danger, protects the Imam. And after him, it's the fourth Imam. Again, when it comes to the services which she provides, how she protects the Imam. For example, on the day of Ashura, one after the other, everyone collapses, Imam brings the bodies to the camps. Now, when a father brings the body of a son, it is a very desperate, a touchy moment. A father breaks, a father collapses. What she does, she knows the feelings of the father. She takes the body and turns the father back to the battlefield so that he doesn't cry, he doesn't break. She wants him to be strong until the last moment. Sends the Imam back and she weeps on Akbar. And when you see Sham, and when they are to return from Sham back to Medina, it was the fierce sermons, talks delivered by her in the courts of Yazid that he changes tone. And when he sees that he has made a big mess and everything is just moving against him, a revolution is about to take place in Sham, he changes his tactics, his policies, and says, we allow you to go back to Medina, and there a lavish ride is created so that the household of Prophet, they go back to Medina. She comes there and says, what is this? You want us to get into these rides? All of that should turn black. We are a procession of aza, of mourning. We have a message to give, and that is a message of mourning, a message of aza. And upon her instructions, everything is turned black, and she comes to Karbala in that way. Zainab, she is great. Whatever has remained from Karbala, it's a result of that sacrifice which she gave or that mission which she had for Aba Abdullah. She says that so long as Hussein was alive, I saw him quite a few times a day. I put a condition in my wedlock that I should see my brother. If he travels, I should travel with him. I must travel with him. And then, on this day of Ashura, when she comes by the body of Aba Abdullah, she says that, Hussein, whenever I wanted to see you, I saw you, and these two eyes of mine were sufficient to see you. But now this Hussein of mine has appeared in 1,000 pieces, and I need 1,000 eyes to see this Hussein. When did you drift from me to wish for you? When were you heading to me, for me to search for you? With 1,000 rays and flashes, you have appeared to me. I need 1,000 eyes for me to look at you. Hussein, when were you hidden to me, for me to look for you? When did you fade for me to wish for you? With 1,000 rays and flashes, you have appeared to me. I need 1,000 eyes for me to look at you. You are not an occultation for me to pray for you. You are not an occultation for me to pray for you. Nor are you lost for me to search for you. With 1,000 rays and flashes, you have appeared to me. I need 1,000 eyes to gaze and look at you. Allah, la'natullah, ala al-qawm al-zalimeen, wa sayya'lamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun ghanibin yanqalibun. Rabbana, taqabbal minna, innaka anta as-sami'un alim. May Allah accept these majalis that were held bi qabul and hasan. May Allah make these majalis a majlis of ma'rifah, a majlis to increase the level of awareness of us. May Allah make these majalis an asset for us, for our graves and for our hereafter. May He tabarak wa ta'ala enlist us and our children among the best who ever existed. May Allah hasten the arrival of our Imam. May Allah count us among His best supporters, best servants, and those who seek martyrdom in His service. May Allah protect every Shia, every Mu'min in every corner of the world. May Allah protect us and our parents, our children, from every evil, from every shar. May Allah tabarak wa ta'ala grant shifa to all those who have requested for dua, in particular those who are present in this majlis. May Allah elevate the ranks of all those who have passed away, from our relatives, from our friends, and everyone present in this majlis. Wa akhiru da'wana an alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Amma yujibu al-muzdah wa yakshifu al-su. أما يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء أما يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه أما يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء أما يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء. Matam Hussein.